Okay, let's get started. So, hello, hope everyone had a good break. Y'all have a break?
Yeah. 3 days.
Exactly.
Study session?
Exactly.
Same here.
So we have 3 more lectures, including today. On the last lecture, my plan is to cover, cover the final exam. We'll talk about that and then, you know, talk about questions about that. I figure that'll take the whole class. I can do another study session for questions during exam period, closer to the time of the exam, a couple of days before. Then Thursday, I was going to talk about basically where do web applications fit in with the rest of the world, the future, that sort of thing, so I'll kind of give a context lecture. And today I want to talk about other web application frameworks. So I had put on talking about databases, but I looked back and I said I pretty much said most of what I wanted to say there. So if there's specific questions you have, I can talk about those. But otherwise, I've covered most of the stuff I want to talk about with databases. I can repeat certain points and stuff, but so. Although some aspects with databases and data modeling will come up certainly here. So, and of course, then next Tuesday and then next Wednesday, your final projects are due.
Yay.
Yes.
We have a new project.
Oh yeah, I know. Funny that. What kind of documentation you're supposed to write?
One file you're supposed to, like, the final
guide. Oh yeah.
Basically, the only thing I'm doing right now as far as the drafting is adding things in terms of elaboration. So it's basically final. Like one thing, Alexei had an idea yesterday. He was telling me, who is this documentation for? It's for the person who's supposed to revive your app after. It's for the person who's supposed to revive your app after a disaster or something. How are they going to get it running? What is it for? Maybe you're all dead. How do they know what to do with it? I mean,
so isn't the source code?
Isn't the source code? Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
How much detail should we go into in terms of, like, NPM command line and Mongo? Can we just say?
I mean, it would be great if you could just have all the commands that someone types into a terminal and just runs.
Well, commands are good. But I also want some context. I don't want just commands because it'd be nice to know, like, what are your, what are people trying to accomplish? Like, how do they debug it? They don't know what they're doing. If you just tell them the commands, they don't know why they're doing it. You can assume some level of expertise. You can, if you want, you can say, well, you should follow the directions in this getting started guide, like here, give a link. You don't have to give the whole getting started guide.
You know, something like MongoDB, can we just
say get MongoDB up and running, that should be fine. You know, assume it's on the standard port. You know, I mean, you could, if you wanted to be pedantic, you can give a reference to the MongoDB website, but I'm not going to be too, you know, really care about that. I more care about links to things that, like, I might not know about.
Right.
I mean, if I haven't talked about it in class, don't assume I know about it. So, and in general, try to make it so that someone like 3 or 4 years from now, or maybe even 10 years from now, could figure out what the heck this thing's doing. So, give links, but maybe those links will go away. So try to give some context of what the link was. Yes.
Would it be okay to make like a make file for the commands?
Make files are great. Make it easy to figure out. Now, keep in mind what I would like to do with your projects is run them. I would like to. I do not have to, but if I like your project and I'm curious about it, I might just try running it. So I'm not promising to run all of yours, but I would like to run them. And if I feel like running your app and it breaks for whatever reason, you say, well, you forgot to do this. Did you document it? No. Well, I'm going to kind of not feel so happy about that functionality part. So, yes?
On a separate server, can we just give you, like, tell you where it is so you can look at it yourself? Because the setup for us is probably going to be semi-complicated.
Is that server included in your Git repository?
Yeah, the entire thing is in the Git repository, but it's just like domain specific. So if you're not hosting it on the right server, then it won't completely work.
What kind of server do you need?
No, it's just like it's domain specific. Like I'd like to have.
Oh, domains. Oh, we hard code with. Oh, I see what you mean.
So I can just like.
It can't. You can't set it up to run a local host.
Yeah, but not with the API functionality. It has to be specific. It's domain specific because of how the API works. It like has to make sure that you're right, using the right domain, or else it won't like allow that functionality. So is it okay if I just like tell you which server it is, and then you can still run it without that functionality, but.
Well, I would suggest it's in general good to have a way to get your thing running without requiring polluting DNS.
Yeah, well,
so
that's the thing. It's set up with the API that we're using is requires that.
Like you'd make a special magic DNS entry that would work for testing purposes.
I can try, but
you should be able to run it, you know, separately. It's not to say you can't integrate with other things, but it should be. Or at least say this is what the domain name is, but I mean, I have domain names on my machines.
Yeah, I know. It's like, it's.
You've hard coded it?
I think what he's getting to is the API he's hooking into is using a specific key pointed to his domain. So unless you register for your own API.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to, like, it's. Your API registration uses our domain, so you have to make, like.
Okay, so this is like Twitter or something?
No, it's not Twitter. Twitter's portable. No, it's Twitch TV.
Oh, okay, so they want you to be a specific domain,
yeah.
And so.
So you like register your domain with the API so that it knows which domain. So.
Okay, so.
Will you be running the server continuously over the exam break?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, if your server is up,
yeah,
then I could. Then can I connect to it then?
Yeah.
Okay, then. Okay, fine. Yeah.
That's what I was.
If your source code's there and you have a server set up with some configuration, as long as I can run it, then. Okay. Sorry, you were ahead? Did you? Okay. Yes?
Would it actually be worth it to host it on some free web server online? Just give it away? To make it easier?
If you want to do that, that's always interesting, but if I'm going to try. And part of it, I'd like to bring it up and running myself, kind of part of it to see your documentation. Does it tell me how to do it? So. I won't discourage that. But you certainly don't have to do that.
So, given, like, in the instructions, you had a bunch of, like, documents that you want included.
Right,
getting one. Started part of the documentation, that should go in the README file for that? In its own?
So I'm not expected to, I'm not expecting you to give me, if you want to give me a getting started, that's perfectly fine. I'm expecting that this is enough. That, you know, you just tell me, I guess I haven't explicitly said exactly how to get it up and running.
Yeah.
But I've kind of said, I guess I'm kind of assuming that it'll be pretty obvious. Because if you've done an NPM, you know, if it's a Express program, I know how to get those running. I know how to get MongoDB running. I know how to get other databases running. I mean, they're not saying, you tell me what the dependencies are. The dependencies should tell me basically what I need to do. If you need to, I mean, a lot of times these documentations have getting started, it's like, okay, you do this. I'm not asking for that kind of documentation. If you want to include that, that certainly, you know, might make things easier, but I'm expecting that from the dependencies in the README, I should be able to figure out how to get up and running. And if it's not obvious from that.
Yeah. I mean, if you're using the software and the dependencies that we've already covered in class, you should just assume that you're going to know how to.
Exactly. And that's exactly what I'm saying, is I don't want you spending time just telling you how to do that. But now if there's something special, it's like, well, you need a MySQL database with a table predefined with this, and you need to put the account information in this file. You can tell me that. You don't need to tell me, this is where you go to MySQL. This is how you install MySQL. This is what the thing is. This is, you know, it's like.
So what you're saying is you don't want your intelligence
insulted. I want you to be. Explain things, but you don't have to assume I know nothing. But you should assume that I don't know your project. And I don't necessarily know all your dependencies. Yes?
Sure.
I did?
And the second thing is, GitHub. If GitHub. Like, our repo is on GitHub.
Yeah, but you're forked, so that's yours.
Actually, since it's forked off something private, we can kill your fork at any time.
And it's also, we have a bunch of issues, and we can, like, to keep our time. Just
we can transfer ownership if you request it.
Yeah.
Oh.
Can that be done by default?
I will, I have to find out exactly what the policies are. I certainly see no reason to delete your account. And GitHub does allow you to have your own account. But the only issue is GitHub doesn't normally let you have private accounts.
Unless you register with the academic micro account.
Oh, students, they do. Okay, so in that case, they should be able to keep it private.
Do those time out?
Yeah,
huh?
You just have a limit on the number of private
repositories. For 2 years, you get 5.
I mean, the nice thing, though, with Git is you clone the repository, you have the entire history.
That's true.
You don't have issues. Yeah, you
don't get the GitHub issues. That's true. You don't get the GitHub issues. Although, aren't those...
Comments on pull requests.
Can you not get that out of GitHub at all?
I had to write a script to get it from our
Yeah, we can try to answer ownership. That's the always thing about these online cloud services is like how much do you control it? How much do you control it? That's the downside of all these things.
You have no problem with this, and the administration has no problem. You just make all the repositories public.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily want to make things public by default. I'd want to keep it private by default and have. But I don't. I mean, it's not going to be going away anytime soon after the class. They don't just get rid of it, and I'll make sure that it doesn't get rid of. So I'll check to see what the lifetime is of it. I think it'll probably hang around for a good while. But you never know with these things, so. Okay, so, yeah, I got an extra C in there. Here, CHITECTURE. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. What? Hmm? Ah, thank you, yes.
Oh, yeah, extensions is spelled wrong.
Extensions.
Extensions.
Yeah, that is spelled wrong. And.
README is spelled right.
Yeah, exactly.
Is architecture supposed to be marketing?
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
That's actually my server. That's my issue, which I will. Okay. Should I go ahead and fix that? Yeah. Let me go ahead and fix that. Hold on 1 second. This will take a moment. No. This is why I don't want to change things here now. It's like. Okay. I can of course SSH to my box from here. I'm not SSHing on there, but okay. Sudo service Apache. To what?
Today's lesson is on how to remotely manage a server.
As well as care about you. They care about you and they show their love.
One day. Just one day. Oh.
Done. Okay, let's get. Anything else? Let's go into web frameworks.
Quickly, the architecture markdown can that also include.
Oh, sorry, I didn't put MD on that because it's not necessarily an MD file. It was on purpose.
Yeah.
That was right.
Never
mind. It might be a PDF or a. That's why I said that afterwards.
Yeah, we just have a PNG.
A PNG is fine. Yeah, I think I said. I said text or PDF. PNG is fine too. I mean text. We'll say text PDF. PNG or JPEG.
So on that note, if it's
like neat but like hand drawn.
You can scan it. That's fine.
Okay.
Just one of those formats. Yeah. neat, please. Otherwise, I'll feel bad about giving you full marks for that. So, okay, so you can keep going. Yeah, for some reason I don't quite know, which I really want to figure out, is that periodically my MediaWiki install stops allowing write access. I mean, it locks up like that. Basically, it's seg faulty. I've checked it. The PHP process seg faults when I try to do a commit, and if I restart Apache, everything's fine.
Weird.
And it just seems like it goes on for a while, and then it's like, what is causing that? I need to ask some. I want to do some debugging or something.
You've run for too long. You should have less privileges.
Yeah. So anyway, that I don't know. It's not restoring the database. The database is fine. I never touch it. It's MediaWiki. It's like it doesn't have any state. All of its state's in the database. All I can.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Anyway. Going back to this. So, y'all wanted to know how the stuff we've talked about in class compares to all of the other web application frameworks out there. Have any of you taken a look at this Wikipedia page? Let me show you what we're talking about here. So, languages. So here's listing ASP.NET, C++, Cold. These are all web application frameworks. Okay? Those are just a listing of the versions. And here's the comparison. And it goes on here.
Yeah. Really
yeah, yeah. It just kind of keeps going on and on and on and on and on and on. Yeah. So, how do I talk about these in the next hour?
Number from 1 to 10.
What?
They posted
Be quickly. No. So I can't possibly talk about all of these in detail. And in particular, you can't expect to understand all of these things in detail. The good news is you don't care. And the thing you the table they give you is actually has some value, although I wouldn't necessarily use it as a so they have things like does it support AJAX, MVC, push-pull, internationalization, ORM testing frameworks, ORBI, you know, security frameworks, template frameworks, caching frameworks, form validation frameworks. If they start seeing no's here along any of these lines, you're probably, it's problematic, but essentially everything that you really care about is going to be yeses across the board. There's some variation in the push-pull category, I can tell the MVC push pull, which I can talk about. So, MVC model view controller idea. So, after looking at this comparison and looking at the various frameworks, I realized this Wikipedia page is comprehensive and mostly useless. So, not an insult to Wikipedia or anything. In fact, I should probably, edit, but how to think about these things, you really have to take a step back for understanding these things. And what makes sense is first to think of this in a historical context. And that's where I'm going to try to start with today. What came first? Right? First came the web server. What's a web server designed to do? Classic web servers.
Serve static pages,
serve files. That's what web servers were originally designed to do. Most of these can be thought of, to understand these, you have to first understand this. And you have to understand then, going from this to a web application server, where do you go? And the big issue you have is, okay, a request is coming in. Now the web server has to figure it out. If it's just a file, there's lots of ways of taking that file and delivering it. But now you want to run arbitrary code on every HTTP request. How do you run that code? In what language that code be? It could be. What connection does it have to the web server? And how do you keep that code from stepping on other code that is servicing other requests? That's the basic problem space. So what was the first attempt at solving this? Anyone know what I talked about, the first kind of way to do dynamic web pages?
CGI.
That begat CGI. So CGI in its original conception is pretty simple. So this would normally serve files or HTTP, and classic it would fork on each request. Because that was the standard Unix model of doing things. A new copy of the process to handle each incoming request. So then CGI worked so CGI defines an API. Well, when we say an API, it's actually really simple. It's just command lines and things. You give it certain environment argument variables and stuff, and then you pass information into this process, and then it runs a program and that does things and it returns a result. It returns a result and it has its own file descriptor set up so it can send the data back to the remote system. Now, why is this not good enough? Overhead. Yes, but why?
I was just going to say it's not as scalable.
So scalable, overhead, true. That's a big part of it. Not the only thing, but the main thing. But why? What's wasteful here?
It's forking the process every time.
The fork is a bit wasteful. There's something much more wasteful in here. This is the expensive part. So in Unix terminology, fork creates a new process, exec loads a new program binary. That means on every request, you're loading a new program binary. So you go like, crap. You know, that'll work. I mean, if your web server is not very high traffic, it's fine. But that takes a lot of cycles to load a new program, and that's wasted time. Well, it could be C, it could be Perl, and especially Perl, you're string behold interpreter every time. There's ways to beat it up, but still, you've got all the initialization. Let's say this thing has to connect to a database or something. Let's say it has to load a configuration file. It's doing that every time it runs on every request coming into the web server. That's bad. And so web application frameworks really came out of saying, we got to do this better. And how do we do this better? So one natural place is you get rid of this exec. How do you get rid of that exec?
Run it in the background and queue up the...
So there's the program that's running is the web server. If you don't want to do an exec, then the web server program has to run the code itself. The easiest way to do that is to use a plugin of some kind. It loads object code that either does the job itself or is an interpreter for something else. This is what, when you look at Apache for mod PHP or mod whatever, these are modules. They're code that you load into the web server process. It doesn't create a new process. It's in memory. So it's there. You can just call it. Instead of starting a whole new thing, it's there. And you can... If you want to initialize it, it'll initialize when the web server comes up, and then it's ready to go. So there you go. Okay. That's better. So, what's this? So this is a replace with, there's some sort of extension mechanism. Then you say fork is too expensive. Creating a whole new processing request. And some systems, like if you're running on Windows, don't even have fork. When you create a process normally on Windows, you load a separate binary in every process. You don't have the cheap forks that you do on Unix. So what do you do instead? You replace this with a thread. A separate execution context running in the same process. So now you have your Apache process. It's now got many threads in it instead of separate processes. What's the difference? They now all share memory. So now we've gotten efficiency, and what have we lost?
Security.
Well, security and fault tolerance is reliability. Any of those threads, if they corrupt Apache's memory, now the entire server is potentially gone. You've lost that protection boundary. So you go, well, maybe I can do safety in some other way. And so a lot of web frameworks say, we're going to do threads, but we're going to sandbox the code for handling each request in some other way. Such as what? Have any of you used JSP or ASP or? Mm-hmm. So in JSP, Java Server Pages, JSP is built on this technology called servlets. What an annoying term, servlets. Sorry. Let's see. Do they actually? Java Server.
No, I think I saw it.
Is it Java JSP? Java Server Faces. That's
a JSP.
Take over. Okay, fine. Okay, I'll just cue. I'm gonna bring up another web page here. So if you look at Java Server Pages. So there's two separate versions of this. So two separate things. Well, let's see. So they have servlets here. Where's servlets? Fine. Okay, there we go. So first off, a Java servlet. So one thing you should first off look at this and looks kind of messy architecturally. Now there's, so first thing we go, you know, JSP translator, Tomcat, servlet source, Java compiler, server class. So, and then, God, this is just, this is all cached and stuff, but the key thing to know about a servlet is a bit of Java written to a certain class definition of servlets, which is basically, think of it like CGI, but in Java. That's all it is. You're just defining this little thing, little bit of code that can handle individual requests. And you're sticking it in something, but instead of a separate process being exec'd off, it's in a Java class. And so it gets loaded. Now, of course, if you want to have this bit of code and have it be dynamic at all, you might actually have to compile Java code at runtime. That's where you get into things, and you need a place for that little bit of Java code to link into the rest of the server. That's what things like Tomcat are. Things to run the servlet. And of course, when you're running the servlet, you can do things like sandboxing. You all, first of all, have the Java type safety and inherit sandboxing, and you can do more sandboxing with things like Tomcat. And then you know, this is a horrible diagram. Sorry, I just. But in any case, so you have this servlet, which is just a fragment of Java. Then you go over to, then you go to things like this. Have we seen stuff like this in class?
Can you do that stuff in Jenkins? You can do that sort of thing in Jenkins.
Jade is basically, Jade and JSP, similar flavors. Jade's not quite JSP. There's another thing that's kind of like JSP exactly, because the difference between Jade and this is here, you put together a web page and embed code in it. In the Jade framework, you're making a template of a page, but normally the code and everything is really external. And there might be a little bit of code for templating and stuff, but most of the real code is outside the server and pushed in. And this is where you get into the whole push versus pull idea of web frameworks. Is this thing is the page. Do you push the data into it for displaying it, or does it grab the data from the rest of the system? Six of one, half dozen the other. It kind of depends on how you want to conceptualize things. I think push normally makes more sense, but if you want to make your system more data-driven, pull can be a better fit. But it's just it's a way how the web framework has broken down the problem.
So in Jade, when you call it with a res render and you provide it data and then it does its thing, that's pushing in?
Yes, exactly. That's a push. Because you have the data, you're now instantiating the template with the data that you want. As opposed to you run the template and then say, what code needs to be run now? And then say, oh, I now need this value. Now you call the routine from the template to get that value. So PHP has basically the same structure as JSP. And this is the way things actually used to be done much more, which was you'd create web pages, and then you'd stick your code in there. But the code that you stick in there is not code to be run on the client. It's code to be run on the server. And so the server then takes the page template, runs it to the interpreter, and then gets a web page out, and that's what gets returned.
You run JavaScript on the client side in one giant steaming mess of three languages.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You run the PHP on the server to parse it, you get a web page which will have JavaScript embedded, and then you send it to the client. So that's another mock. Let me finish with this execution mob. I'm getting a little distracted here. Sorry. So you can fork it, you then move to threads. Then the other way of doing things is say, oh, threads are too much. I don't want to have full execution threads for handling individual requests. I want something even lighter weight. So this is where you get into single-threaded processes using some sort of coroutines or callbacks or other things, because those are even lighter weight. You're not spending any time at all. It's cooperative multitasking. You don't have to run a scheduler.
What's a code crew?
Oh. Yeah, I can't explain coroutines now. That would take a lecture to itself. The basic idea of it is it's like a subroutine, but instead of calling it and returning, you can kind of think of them running side by side, and they're all the flow of control isn't here and back. It's they can go from here to this one to this one to this one to thing. Think of it like go-tos between subroutines. That's what you can do with coroutines. So it's a nice way of encapsulating concurrency. So Go uses coroutines and calls them Go routines. But again, the idea is to split things apart that have their own dependencies and stuff and run them separately and schedule them separately as their conditions come up, but not interrupting them. That's the big difference between things like threads and these other kinds of lighter weight concurrency mechanisms is you don't do preemption. Because preemption is expensive. Yes?
What other frameworks other than Node that do single-threaded asynchronous?
I'll get to that. It turns out there's now a lot. And they're basic. So when I talk about these different styles and things, then we get into languages. And to a first approximation, most of these styles are implemented in most of the languages. It's not quite a full matrix, but for anything popular, they tend to support a lot of these things. Like, you can run PHP in more of a forked mode, or you can run PHP in more of a thread mode. And I think there's even PHP now that's going for single-threaded performance. I certainly know there's Java stuff that does all of this. So one thing is, what's your execution model? Now, you notice when you get to these lighter and lighter ways of doing concurrency, the trade-off is the programmer has to do more. When you get to real cooperative multi-threading, like a node, you can't sit there and do lots of work in each routine. You have to break it up. But that's how you get higher performance. Now, the other way is, how do you generate a web page? Basically, all of these systems have templates of some kind. The question is, at what level is the template? So here at JSP, the template is this focus. You create the web page and you embed your code in it. So logically, you're just using templates with code embedded with them. Something like Node, it's the opposite. Your code is central and you use templates separately. Then there's other systems where the templates aren't even obvious at all. Like, for example, there's the... Let me play with the Google Web Toolkit. So there are things where your entire system is in a different language. Like, for instance, the Google Web Toolkit, everything's in Java. And you're writing server code and client code, all in Java. And then you have a compiler that translates everything into the other separate languages. It will generate the necessary HTML and necessary JavaScript and everything for you, but you're programming at this other level entirely.
C#.NET
does that. Right. So you have, there's always some sort of template for generating these things. The question is, how far away are you from it and how central it is? Either it's in your face and it's central, or it's something you have to deal with and you're more focused on your other code and you sort of fill in the blank, or you don't see them at all. And you can imagine there's benefits and disadvantages to all the different strategies. And sometimes you want to know exactly what kind of web pages you're creating. And that's the real focus, more documents there. You don't have much code, so maybe this makes sense. Or your system is very code-centric, and so it makes sense to have the templates be a side thing. Or maybe you don't want to deal with all those other technologies. So that's kind of a high level view of how I tend to think about these things. And let's talk about some specifics. So let's say you like Node. Well, a best way of doing this is saying, I don't like Node. What do you like better? What you say is, instead of telling me a framework, tell me a technology that you'd prefer to use.
Algol?
I haven't seen that. I've seen lots of small talk. It's definite small talk stuff. I've not seen Algol. Algol's, yeah. But like, for example, let's say you want to do things with Java. Java, you have a lot of options. Let's say you say, I like Java, but I want to do something more Node-like. But in Java. As I don't want this template stuff. I want something that looks up. So, let's see. Is it in this list? This is even out of date, too. Doesn't even have all the new stuff. So, like, yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I if anyone wants to put in some edits, I don't think I have time to right now. I need to edit my own wiki. But so, if you want Java, or actually, if you want to do polyglot, so it means you want to program in lots of different languages. So, you want JavaScript, CoffeeScript, Ruby, Python, Groovy, or Java, mix and match all components in a single app, all running on a Java virtual machine, you can do it. And then you want to say, what does it look like? Oh, look at this. Load vertex.js, JS, create HP server, request handler, function request. Does this look kind of like anything we've seen?
Yeah,
that was good. Yep. Of course, so Vertex first off supports JavaScript, so it can basically be very much like Node, because it's even JavaScript. But you can also do it, let's see, looked at this for a while. What? Where's the Java one?
If you go back up there, tabs there.
Yeah, the tabs.
Show me the code.
Wait, show me the code. Oh, there, thank you. So this is the Java version. Huh? always longer. This is, I have to say, this is one reason why I do like JavaScript. You know, see, Ruby looks kind of the same. Python looks kind of the same. Groovy? I don't know. Groovy, I've never really looked at it. I just recently looked up Lua. I hadn't actually spent any time looking at Lua. Lua is a nice language.
Multi-value
return. Yeah, I learned Clue in as an undergrad, which is the language originally, CLU is the language that originally had multi-value returns. But multi-value returns are nice. Also, you'll if you learn JavaScript, Lua has a lot of similarities. The whole focus on you know, basically,
Python can do
sociomaps.
Multi-returns.
Most things can do most things. I mean, it's kind of funny nowadays. It more depends on what it's central to it. Python's very powerful. I mean, I'm not going to say it, but there's style differences more than anything else nowadays. But anyway, so you see Java. You want to do things in Java. Here you go. Huh?
Gross.
So, but let's say I don't like this whole... So you might want to say, wait, I don't like single-threaded processes. I don't like having to manage concurrency. I want someone to do that for me. Well, you can do that. That's where you go into... So then we're talking about things like... Let's say I want to do something like JSP, but I want to do something more modern. So let me... What are Apache Struts? Or Sling. Okay, a Sling I don't...
That's what I like.
Sling?
A layer over Sling.
Wait, Sling is for Java?
Yeah.
It's not in here. It's not in this list.
Apache Sling.
Oh, Apache Sling? Oh, sorry. Apache Sling. I actually haven't looked at Apache Sling. How does it compare? It's fine. So a reasonable question before, I mean, I can kind of go on and kind of talk about how all these kind of fit into this space, but they all have some various mix of, the other thing that they all differ is in how do you connect to the back-end store? How do you manage persistence? Now, if you haven't realized this, why? So in classic concurrent systems, you start having to do many things at once. You normally have to do lots of locking, lots of mutual exclusion. And in a classic web application, you don't spend a lot of time doing that. But yet, you can have high levels of concurrency. You can have lots of things going on at the same time. Why? Nope. You're updating the same data all the time, and you don't use those. It's because you are using them. It's just that it's in a program that you don't mess with directly, i.e. the database. The web server code is fundamentally single-threaded. When you want to do parallelism, you normally do parallelism between the effects of different requests. And where do those get, meet with each other? In the database. And that's why single-threaded web servers actually make a lot of sense. You want to make them as fast as possible, but if you want to parallelize them, you just run more than one of them. And then where do they interact? The database. Because you're having to deal with shared data. Mutating shared data. That's what databases are designed to do. This is something that I don't think it was really intended this way when web applications were built, but it's kind of this nice thing that happened that we sidestepped a lot of issues in parallelism by just going with real databases from pretty early on in the web, even when that wasn't really necessary. And when we've gotten away from full-fledged, relational databases into the now NoSQL phase, it's been saying, well, that gives us too many guarantees. That gives us too much protection for concurrency. We can relax some of those in order to get better performance. But we started off with the safest way of doing things, and now we're relaxing safety to get performance. So, but that means that, again, you don't, if you start having to deal with locks and everything like that, you're probably doing it wrong. So why are there so many ways of doing this? What this should tell you when you look at this is you should see lots of programmers looking at what's existing and going, blech, I don't like that. I'm going to make my own. And you should ask yourself, why? Programmers like to create new things, but like they don't create... When they create things like this and this frequency, it says something about the problem space.
It's hard. We haven't solved it yet.
It's growing.
Well, this growth hasn't been completely solved. So if you start looking at these different web frameworks, you notice that none of them are suitable for all web applications. What this really means is that it's not one application domain. The web is not one thing. It's many, many things. And depending upon what kind of application you want to build, different web frameworks are more suitable. I mean, if you're creating a blog, if you want to create something that's blog-like, what should you create it in?
PHP for me.
How about WordPress? WordPress is built on PHP, but I specifically say something like WordPress because you can think of something like WordPress as a web application framework because it is so extensible. Similar things like Joomla or Drupal or other things, they provide lots and lots of function, and at least what level you cut it off is completely arbitrary. What's happening now is you're getting these templates for basic applications, which allow extensions that allows you to extend them to do other things. And you might look at that and go like, oh my God, WordPress? I've looked at the code for WordPress. It's completely gross. I want to do something else. And that's where programmers go like, I need to develop a new web framework. Because it's just, I want to solve this problem. I tried reading their code. I tried looking at their extension things. I don't like it, so I'm going to do it myself. And if it was just a lot of frameworks that weren't being widely used, it'd be one thing, but a lot of these have very wide adoption. They're used by a lot of organizations. So some of them stick around for, frankly, legacy reasons. I think anyone using ASP or JSP, you know, RAW or something like that, it's because they got something old. You know, no one starts a new project using those kind of technologies, even though they still exist. I mean, you know, still very functional, but...
I popped in a link to the website that ranks popularity of web frameworks on your
on the
wiki.
Mm-hmm. No, that was right here. You put it here, right, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, go back here.
In the lecture notes for the...
Wait, no. Come on.
For the web framework.
Why is it... Okay, there we go. And you looking for this class today? Right, yes. So what is...
Is
ASP.NET really at the top? What does that mean?
Well, it's the index rating. It's different depending... Like, right now it's doing it by languages. But you can switch it from languages to... the actual framework.
Okay, language.
Wait,
actually,
so what?
This is best for popularity not applicable.
So you go
Haskell.
Yeah.
I have worse than ActionScript.
No, but you see, so the way you should understand web frameworks is first pick the language you'd like. If you don't really care about the language, actually you're better off way of doing it is pick an application, or pick a framework that you know provides a lot of the functionality you want, so you minimize the amount of code you have to write. Really, nowadays, you'd say, oh, there's an existing this, I can just extend it. But programmers don't often think about, do I really need to code that? Doesn't it already exist? Or can I make a 5-line change to that program and make it do what I want? You should think about that, especially if you're with a customer.
And do the licenses work?
Licenses also matter.
Is
so,
it going to interfere with my code in another way?
So that is one thing that's actually... So one question is, why are all these open source? I mean, there are commercial ones, but everything nowadays people use, I think, is mostly open source. Typically on some sort of MIT or Apache license, which basically means you don't have any sort of requirements to distribute the code. Why? Well, partly so that someone else will fix it, but also it's because...
There are so many free ones out there that if anyone tried to do a proprietary, it would just not get used.
I mean, in the 90s, you had a lot of proprietary things, like Cold Fusion. You know?
There's still some really popular ones, like Expression Engine.
Well, I'm not saying there's not any money to be made off proprietary things. I'm saying the foundations tend to be open source. ASP is not open source, although there are clones of it. But it's Microsoft, and they try to make their technology ubiquitous. But the fact is, how much of the web is ASP nowadays? I don't really.
Isn't ASP.NET the one that was open source?
Oh, they might have. I don't know what the.
Big in the news.
ASP.NET. Is a software framework. So license. Proprietary. Oh, Microsoft reference source license. The reference source license is the most restricted Microsoft shared source license. Reviewing for reference purposes, only made with Microsoft class while debugging.
You're looking at .NET, not ASP.NET.
Well, that's true. But didn't I just... Why can't I go back? What happened?
Why is there no back?
Yeah, where'd my back button go?
A
new tab, but where'd my other tab go?
All these tabs.
Too many tabs.
Okay, let's get rid of these. Fine, fine. So...
the Google search...
Oh,
yeah.
The back button is available now.
Oh, it is now? Oh, did it just reappear? Okay.
Yeah, just the .NET.
ASP.NET. Let's see it for... Microsoft source license. This license covers limitations.
Probably just Google ASP.NET.
Okay, fine.
Official.
Oh, yeah. Source code for ASP.NET, MVC, web pages are available under an open source license.
Which open source license?
But I'm saying, it sounds like it's a permissive one. They would have gotten in trouble if they had done that. So,
apparently if they're committed to it.
So, but why? So even Microsoft has done this. Why?
Crowdsourcing.
This is infrastructure code. And what this is saying is that I want to write a web application. Classically, when I want to write an application, I want to build on other people's functionality. I use a library. That library would have some sort of functionality in it, and then I would just call it. But the nature of the web is that I need a framework, not just a library. Why do I want frameworks rather than libraries for handling the web? Why can't I just encapsulate everything?
Most websites have the same functionality, like in terms of just base functionality, so you might as well get a framework to handle all of that.
Right, but again, couldn't I just have a library where I just call it? Why do I need a framework? Why do I need something that big? Partially, but it all is down to concurrency. The problem is you have to structure your code a certain way in order to make it work in the web context. You've got to deal with this issue of there's all these requests coming in, and you have to have code dealing with each request and have to have those then deal with some shared state in the background. There's an organization your application has to have at a high level, but there's lots of different ways of doing that organization. And it's not easy to just do that organization with a sequential code. This classic architecture of standard input-output programs doesn't fit the web. If you try doing things in the library, your code has the wrong structure. You have to refactor it in some way. The frameworks give you a way of organizing your code. Because otherwise, you're going to do it wrong. That's why there's so many frameworks. And in fact, the right way of organizing your code in order to do this sort of thing, where you have lots dealing with this level of concurrency, there isn't consensus on it. There's lots of different ways of doing it. I mean, people look at the way that Node and Vertex do these things, and they go, that's horrible. What are you doing? That's so hard to program. I don't want to program that way, and so they don't. Give me my threads, please. And the other goes, wait, that's ridiculous. No, you can do it this way. I mean, there's all these arguments over the right way of structuring your code. Frameworks give you libraries plus structure. And there is not consensus over structure. So when you choose a framework, you are choosing a structure for your code. And what you want depends on what exactly you're doing. I would argue that the architecture, something like what Node is doing, is arguably the structure you should have going forward. Now, not to say that someone tomorrow might come up with something better, because frankly, dealing with all the callbacks is a bit painful. And when can be, depending on how the structure of the code. There are other folks that are trying to do things without callbacks. So I try to do other kinds of ways of implementing what's known as the reactor pattern, which is what. Yes, and you look at this. I mean, this is how the web has changed. People thought, oh, I've got this way of doing it, and they go like, how about this? Lay out with this. So in that sense, it's not a solved problem. But the thing that's not solved is the way to structure the application. When you look under the scenes, these things are mostly the same. Like, for example, what do you have to do with this web server? The web server has to take an HTTP request in, get the URL, parse it, and then decide what to do with it. How are you going to parse that URL? You're probably going to do something using a parsing engine of some kind, some sort of language, probably involving regular expressions, maybe. And sure enough, you look behind all these things, that's in there somewhere. Apache has this big parsing engine, and if you decide to use your code as a plugin to Apache, you rely on Apache to route the request to you. If instead your system has a standalone web server like Node, it has its own parsing mechanism that then calls things instead of Apache calling you. If you look at the routing in Node, it allows regular expressions. You can specify patterns. This is the same in all of them. You look at all of them. Python's big. What's the big Python framework? Django. Yes, I was looking at Django. Django has the regular expressions are right there, saying, okay, I want to run before you run this function. Here's the regular expression for the pages that should match. You look at Node. If you want to, you can stick in regular expressions, but they have a standard syntax that doesn't involve regular expressions. Well, it's actually Connect, you're right. Because there are other things for Node, too. I shouldn't conflate the two. Node is like layer below. I'm really talking about Express. And Express relies on Connect. But again, no one uses Connect by itself, do they? Are you using Connect by yourself?
Yep.
You got rid of... That's really funny. Yeah, no, I know, I'm seeing this, but you're just using Connect by itself, because...
A lot of the Express stuff is literally the Connect stuff. Like,
oh, it is.
It's like, you connect to things.
Hmm? What? Hmm?
Express is like connect a bit of organization, two extra tools.
Yeah.
Not very much more.
No, it's not. But I'm saying, but it's like, it gives you that organization that it gets you starting. So it means you guys, like, you didn't like Express, or you just started without Express?
I didn't like Express on. They didn't want it. Oh,
huh?
Sorry, Connect. Yeah. They didn't want Connect.
Would
too
you?
Much, too heavy. Did not want Express, and I didn't want Connect, but...
Ah, you wanted to implement it from scratch, as much as possible.
I implemented it from scratch.
Lord help you.
Hey, thanks, Simon, for that. Most of our project in the last few weeks has been working with code.
Let this be a lesson to you all. This is a classic programmer failing. I don't like how that one, how they programmed it, so I'm going to program it instead. Now, it's not to say that you can't do it better. I'm not saying that you can't do it better. All I will say, though, is the time you spent doing it better, you could have done it better by even better by extending or modifying what someone else did.
Hmm?
Yeah.
It sounds like an anti-powder.
It's a...
Well, not invented here.
Not invented here, yeah. It's programmers like to write code. Programmers hate to read code. It's a truism. And how to get around that, I don't know. You all know that you can read all... Where's all the code that you're using for Node? Did you know that basically everything is right in that directory you use?
Yeah.
Hmm? When you say npm install and it plucks a bunch of files in there, they're all in node modules, you can cd into that directory, look at all those things, and the code's there. It's even commented.
Yeah. Well, so many
if you're lucky.
Some of it's more comments than others.
And
that's comments.
Zero was for impassable.
It was opposite.
And it was opposite. That was a fun
and
bug.
We only found that through trial and error.
Yeah.
None of the documentation had
it. It was a fun bug.
Did
good.
You submit a bug patch?
No, that would be clever and like helpful.
Yeah.
There's also mismatches sometimes between npm stored copies versus the latest on GitHub.
Which is not a bug. No, seriously, one of the designs of Node is that you can have multiple versions
right.
of the same library in your application dependent upon different parts.
But if you do like star and package.json, one would assume that you probably want the latest. Is that an unreasonable assumption?
Unless someone down the line to put some further constraints on it.
Latest stable,
that's true. Yeah, you don't normally want the latest, you want the latest stable. But again, the dependencies are, I wouldn't say Node is the best for, if you're going to go out there in the real world and implement a web application, chances are you're probably going to be extending a web application and you'll be stuck with whatever framework they decided on 10 years ago and you'll be pissed off and you'll have to figure out how to make it working. If you are lucky enough to start a web application from scratch, you might want to consider something like Node. But maybe not. I mean, like, for example, Ruby on Rails has a huge following. You know, it thinks, you know, there's, of course, all these great, you know, Java frameworks. There's, you know, Python. I mean, there's all these great possibilities. Which one you use is a matter of taste as much as anything else. I'm glad I taught you Node for the simple reason that it has all the basic ideas of all these other guys. It's generally more concise and if you can understand Node, you can probably understand those because, frankly, understanding the single-threaded callback architecture is the hardest of all of them, I think. Because multi-threaded, they're separate. You don't have to worry about how much time your code takes.
Each other.
Huh?
You have to worry about, oh, I need to block this and then mutex that.
So, threading is the is easier to understand, but harder to get right.
I
mean,
it's No,
no, no. You can understand threading perfectly well and just shoot yourself in the foot on a regular basis because it's sequential execution. When you're doing callbacks, you really have to think, okay, this program's going to stop running and then I'm going to start another. So if you feel at all comfortable using callbacks, you've mastered the hardest, I think, of the web framework. Web frameworks. Everything else will be easy because, I mean, I can just write sequential code. I don't have to wait. I don't have to go do something and then do something else later. I don't have to pass around functions. They're all easier. Not that I think Node is particularly hard, but that conceptual thing is a bit hard. And any other ones, their models are all simpler. But they generally get simplicity at a price, and the price is normally performance. So yeah, no, if you want to go out there and build stuff using Node, that's great. If you want to go out there and learn other web app frameworks, you're fine, but you've learned what you need. If you can use Node, you can use any of them. I've been looking at all these things, and they're all... the hardest part of using them is dealing with the stupid system administration issues that come up with trying to mesh them together. It's like, oh, I want this web server to get along with this extension language and this database. How do I get them all talking to each other? That can be difficult. But that's the hard part. Otherwise, conceptually, there's nothing hard here. You've learned all the basics. So if you've got questions about the basics, so why would I use something like Python? That's another thing you should talk about is, why should I pick one language or the other? For one thing is, what do I like? Why else would I pick a different language?
Sometimes it's optimized for the backend as well. So PHP and MySQL and
SQL. Well, there's been a lot of work on integrating MySQL and PHP. So that can be the path of least resistance. So a lot of times people, one big difference between different languages, though, is the runtimes. So there's the language that you write, and then there's how it runs on the system, how reliable the runtime is, how fast it is. Yes? Oh, yes. There's also who knows. It's also how widely used. Well, yes, popularity matters, and some things, things that are more popular, things that have documentation on them, those matter. But which languages have the fastest runtimes? If your web application, you want it to be maximally fast.
C++.
Assembly, written really well.
Nope. Not for a web app. I have not seen any web apps high performance written in... I take that back. If you run it, you write it in C or C++, you can potentially write portions of your app and make them really fast. But in general...
It's requested static files.
Actually, static files aren't necessarily faster. If you're dynamically generating the content, you might be faster than the disk.
You predetermine every possible...
finitely pushing web application.
Yeah. So what I just told you is you don't know. There is no such thing as the fastest. There is a given implementation that's fastest in a given context, but to say that, C or C++ is faster versus PHP is faster versus whatever, that depends. You're some place like Facebook, which had a whole bunch of PHP code, and you say, crap, I want to make it faster. Do you switch languages? You write a new PHP runtime. That's what they did. There's this next generation PHP runtime, which is like a whole bunch faster. The new Node is really fast because it's running V8, which is a very fast JavaScript interpreter. You look at Lua. LuaJIT is ridiculously fast. There's web frameworks based on it. There's all kinds of fast runtimes. The one thing you want to look at for real, if you want a really fast runtime, is ideally multiple implementations of the runtime, because then there's competition for it. But really, that's not even a standard bar. And frankly, when you're building a web application, most of the time you don't care about the speed of the runtime because something else is going to slow you down, like your network or your database. Those are going to be the limiting things. So, yeah, as long as you're using something relatively modern, it's probably going to be pretty fast. So I've just told you, I'm not telling you which to use. Which should I use? I don't know. Use them all.
At the same time.
I'm saying is if you're really interested in web application development, learn more than one framework. And port, build your app in one, port it to another, learn at least three or four in three or four different languages. If you want to really be, you know, good at this stuff, you know you aren't tied to any one particular technology stack. You think, I don't care. You know, because when you see it, then you start seeing the patterns between all of these things, because they're all using the same ideas. When someone says, oh, I know a dozen programming languages, yeah, because they're all basically the same. You know, this weekend, I had never looked at Lua code. My daughter, you know why I was looking at Lua? Because there's this great thing for the iPad called Codia. It's a game development IDE, believe it or not, in Lua. And it's actually really nice, all in the iPad. And I was going like, this is great for, you know, my 7-year-old daughter to play with. Oh, what's this Lua language? Let me look at it. Okay, I spent some time in the weekend. I was like, oh, read it. Oh, it's got this. Oh, it's got this. Oh, nice language. Done. And I don't expect to have to look up the language at all anymore, except like looking up little details. That's the level you want to be for programming languages. Going like, okay, it's a little bit of this, it's a little bit of that, it's a little bit of that, whatever. Because programming languages are mostly the same, and they keep stealing ideas from each other. Like, you understand closures? They're everywhere. You understand, you know, operator overloading? It's everywhere. Continuations, callbacks, whatever, I mean, they're everywhere. Threading, it's all the same concepts. Prolog's a bit different, but not really that different. I mean it's its own. So it's a decorative language with production rules stuff. But when you build real applications, you build things like that. You just don't have. You have a separate part of your system which does that, which is typically the configuration file parser, which takes in a bunch of rules and uses it. So, all right. Any other questions? I mean, I'm trying to think of how to help you, guide you when you want to learn about web application frameworks, and really, there's lots of good ones out there. There's a lot of good programmers building these. And one thing I'm really curious about is over the next decade, whether this list is going to get smaller. Well, what I'm thinking is, I'll talk about this on Thursday, what I think is going to happen with the space. So. Okay. That's it. And I'll see you Thursday, and then Tuesday I'll have the final exam done, and we'll go through the questions.